The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. My guest is Annie Mallo. She's a partner at the law firm of Holland & Knight LLP. She has extensive retail development and leasing experience. She's got a practice in that area, in fact, a law practice in that area. She represents national retailers and multi-state expansions involving the buying and leasing of locations. And we are going to, of course, talk retail. This has been an area of kryptonite for real estate developers and investors recently. Although the latest I have heard about retail is there are people who are saying this is going to be the year of retail. We've been avoiding it so long. We haven't built enough. There's not enough good retail out there. This in a country that for how long? Decades, we said that the U.S. is over retailed. The amount of square footage per human being in the United States far exceeded those in other countries and continents. And now all of a sudden we're shifting gears, maybe. We'll see what Annie has to say about that. Annie Mallo, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and I'm excited to know where you shop. Give me three or five stores that you spend a good deal of time and money at.
Oh my goodness.
And don't just name your clients.
No, and I will say, as a lawyer, I'll keep my clients' names out of this, just for their
protection.
Client
attorney privilege.
I would like to think they would like to brag about me a little bit, but just out of respect for who I represent. I mean, retail is all over the place. So truthfully, I go to my banking branch on a regular basis. So that's retail. I think people don't totally understand that the retail definition includes things that they do every day. So I go to the gas station at least twice a week, probably like most people. I go to my banking branch.
Why do you go to a banking branch in this day and age when they don't even want you to go there, Annie? They want you to, you have to employ people to attend to you when what they want you to use is the ATM machine or online banking. So you must be keeping people employed by actually showing up at the branch. I'm just curious, why even bother going into a branch?
Well, there are still a few things that require cash around here. And so I do typically go into a bank branch just to get ATM cash and just to keep some on me, especially if a lot of where I travel. So I end up at conferences in Las Vegas all the time. Everything out there is cash only. And then we do have some fun restaurants around Boston that are still cash only or only credit card if you spend above a certain threshold. So Yeah, I have to keep cash on me. And then I do own a real estate development company. And so for business purposes, I do find that I need to pop in every now and then, meet with my banker, move some accounts around, set up new accounts for new properties or new tenants, things like that.
What kind of real estate do you develop?
We do multifamily.
Multifamily. Okay. Very hot category. Very hot for years. I think it's starting to get to the point where it's more competitive with, you know, the single family rentals and some markets getting overbuilt and whatnot. Let me ask you this, though. What percent do you spend of retail dollars you spend in stores versus e-commerce? Do you have any idea on that percentage, what that ratio would be?
So right now, I would say it's probably 80% in store. It's not always been the case. I will say, you know, during COVID, Amazon was my friend and I ordered everything. Now, especially in Boston, we have a lot of urban walk-up retail. And I live in Boston proper. So yeah, it's much more fun to pop out and go to CVS and pick something up than it is to wait 48 hours for Amazon, in my opinion. So I am a little bit of the anomaly in the sense that, you know, I walk by so much retail on a daily basis that I do tend to pop in and still go. And based on the crowds that I see on the streets when I do that, I think a lot of people are leaning that way too. I think, you know, COVID, everyone was like, it's going to be the death of retail. And I think people kind of miss going to the store and trying on a fun new outfit and getting the opinions of the strangers in the dressing room and some of the social aspects of retail
Yes.
shopping that used to just be, I mean, when I was growing up as a teenager, we used to hang out at the mall. And
It
that's
still goes
overrated. I
on.
realize the mall is not a big thing anymore, but
No, but it still goes on at the good ones, the ones that are still thriving. You see the teenagers, they like to hang out. There's just a lot to do there, even for a kid.
exactly. So
You
I
make a good point though. You walk around Boston, that's a concentrate. The northeastern cities, unlike western cities, or at least some western cities, San Francisco being the exception, being more like a northeastern city because of the high concentration. Shopping does not involve getting in a car and driving 30 minutes somewhere. You walk out the door, you walk up the street, and there's retail shops. So it's social, it's nearby, it's a part of the firmament of a city. Boston is great. I love Boston. It's a great city. And so yeah, really good point there. When you think about just based on a city's format, I think that probably has a lot to do with whether bricks and mortar is appealing or not. And we've watched these formats change so much, and we'll get into that in a minute. Let me ask you just generally, what's the current state of US retail in the United States? From your vantage point, what do you see?
So for my clients, so I represent, I'm about 70% tenant side and about 30% landlord. And I intentionally keep my practice balanced probably in that amount because I want to understand the concerns and the pressure points for both sides. I think you do have, there is, a school of thought in law that you can either be a landlord side lawyer or a tenant side lawyer. And I don't like that. I like being able to understand where the opposing side is coming from, what their concerns are, why they may need a certain thing, why is this the hill they're going to die on? And as part of that, I do get the benefit of seeing both sides. From the tenant side, my tenant clients are booming, and they have been for a while. So I would say 2022 was a huge year for them. 2023, we took a bit of a dip. And the reason I saw the dip was more because of the landlord side. So I had tenants looking for space, but landlords struggling with the cost of capital, with whether they were going to be able to get their centers or their buildings done, the cost of construction going up, things like that, whether the rents that the tenants were willing to pay were going to cover the cost that the landlords were going to put in. So I saw the dip, but from my perspective, that was very much driven by the uncertainty in the market still on the landlord side. So even though the tenants were all ready to go, the landlords were kind of slowing down that process. Now my tenants are still ready to go, and I'm seeing landlords come back and say, you know what? We got to get back in business because you got to, at some point, if the costs aren't going to change, you can't just sit on your project. You're really not making any money if you're just sitting on it. And so now I'm kind of seeing those landlords come back to the table and really, really start doing deals as well. In 2024, for us and for the team that I work with here at Holland and Knight, all of our clients are telling us it's going to be a busy, busy year. And I will tell you, the first 2 months of this year for us have definitely shown that. We have been, above capacity on deals, all of our team. And usually January is a little slow in real estate, just kind of as a whole. That has not been the case for our team. We are kind of full steam ahead. So I'm really feeling good about this year in retail real estate. I feel like I see the early parts of that. Most of the time, what I'm working on, you're still 18 months probably from an open door. But what I'm seeing outside and people going to retailers and going to all of these different things, I'm seeing people everywhere and people wanting to be out. And I think our culture, we were all locked down for a few years, and now people are on the other side of that and they want to go to the cafe and they want to pick up a coffee and they want a window shop.
Yeah,
And
Yeah, you see that everywhere. Well, restaurants busy, business events just stuffed with people. There's just been a lot of excitement of getting back out. We take that for the longest time. We took it for granted, and then comes this black swan event, COVID, that made us appreciate that just how much how social we really are. So let me.
Absolutely.
What about what I was saying earlier? You know, for many years, retail catechism was that the retail sector was vastly overbuilt in the United States. Now I hear that quality retail is underbuilt. What do you think? Is do we need to build more retail? And are we? And do we need to destroy outmoded retail space? We have a lot of outmoded retail space that needs to basically be razed. And then, and a lot of new quality space built.
I'm seeing a lot of that. I am seeing, and I think a lot of it comes from the cost of money. Money is expensive. Borrowing money is expensive. And so, unless you're putting in class A, you're not getting the return on your dollar. So I think the issue is, you know, there's not a huge ROI in, you know, C and D level retail if you're not turning that over and making it into class A retail. And that's just the unfortunate side effect of money being expensive. But I am seeing, I do, the
Would you
few
say we're
deals that
overbuilt
I've seen,
still? It sounds like you're saying we're not overbuilt anymore.
I don't think we're overbuilt. I think that there is, let's see, I'm trying to pick my words. I think there is a lot of retail space out there that does not work for today. And so that is going to have to go away. And when it comes to, I know there were a few years ago, just pre-COVID, there was the huge thing about all the malls that were becoming obsolete and people turning those into non-retail or into office or up here, oh my goodness, we have more lab space than you can shake a stick at. But we're Boston and
Oh
biopharma
yeah.
and biotech,
Yeah,
so
you guys are one of the meccas for
yeah. So
for bioscience.
a lot of our malls that were in the city have kind of gone into office and biotech, with a few restaurants, and you see the remnants of the mall around it, but it's definitely skewed that way. What I'm seeing my retail tenants want is to go into your mixed use centers. So those things that are now being built that are a mix of residential, so multifamily apartments or condos on top, maybe an office building or two. Then you have your retail on the first floor, and it's all kind of all in one living. And that's where I'm seeing retail really booming. That's where I'm seeing my clients kind of go, we got to have this site. It's going to have, you know, 25,000 people on top of us. Like they're going to need us here. The demand is just built in. And that's where I'm seeing, because that they can walk out. They can walk out of their condo and they've got restaurants. So even though it may be outside of a major urban center, it still gives that walkability that everyone thinks of when they're in a city. And so I'm really seeing a lot of that, especially in the Midwest. I'm seeing a ton of that kind of, it almost feels like campus living back in the day of college when you had your dorm and then all your classrooms and then your labs and then all the, you know, the food
And we all
options.
love college. Anybody who's gone to college loves college campuses because those are some of the best years of our lives. And I always love driving to a college campus because they just make you feel good. They're beautiful. So the strategy, retailing is much more strategic than it used to be, correct? I mean, when you think back to the strip malls or bigger size malls, it used to be, look, if I have a space and somebody wants to rent it, I rent it to them. But now they think much more in terms of I have to have the proper mix of tenants in here. There needs to be synergy. One needs to feed the other, or I'm going to have people moving out. It's going to be patchy.
Oh, 100%. So I will say, and I've worked with a number of retailers nationwide, a lot of them have a ton of data on this. So you will find that when people are looking for sites now, it used to be, oh, I need 3,500 square feet and room for a drive-through for stacking lanes and yada, yada, yada. And now they're going, It has to be an outlot. It must have a 30,000 square foot grocery store as an anchor because people go to the grocery store where they're not going to necessarily go to a 30,000 square foot other soft goods retailer. We need the grocery store, the people that need to go 3 times a week. They're counting, they're doing traffic studies, they're seeing how many cars are crossing an intersection at any given time. They are actually counting people. So it used to be, well, if this retailer's there, we'll probably be fine. And
And then
it's so
one-off
much more
retailers too,
complex.
right? I mean, unique retailers instead of, look, everybody's got a Starbucks, everybody's got an Applebee's, but now I've got this local brew pub. And it's a one-off. It's just a local one. And they do a really great job. That's what I want in there. Because nobody's going to pull off the freeway to go to an Applebee's or a Starbucks when they've got it in their hometown, sort of thing. Now, do you remember that Wall Street Journal article years ago where they were talking about what you were referring to earlier as getting the right retail at the bottom, say, of a mid-rise or high-rise condo development? And they said when you put in a Whole Foods store, the value of those, the price that you could charge for those condos would go up because you had a Whole Foods in the ground floor on the ground floor.
I mean, vaguely, but it's true. I mean, so much now is, plus we have so many food deserts now where it's just, especially in city living or in suburban living where you just have house after house after house, a grocery store could be 20 minutes away. So having a grocery store that you can pop into and get out of quickly is amazing. I will say that it's probably not just geared toward Whole Foods. At the time, Whole Foods has its own stigma about how expensive it is, that sort of
Whole
thing.
paycheck.
Yeah. The truth is, I think if you have a Publix or a Kroger or any
Trader
major,
Joe's, my favorite, Trader Joe's.
Wegmans, that's a huge one right now that you
Wegmans,
see
yep.
everywhere. Harris Teeter is expanding. But those kind of new all-inclusive supermarkets, I think any one of them now is going to make anywhere living. It's just people love to be home and run down and pick something up.
Yeah,
And
you kind of European style shopping is what am I going to have for dinner tonight? I'll grab those items now. I don't have to stuff my refrigerator because it's a trip to Costco once a week or month and fill the back of the SUV with everything. Let me ask you about omnichannel retailing. Has that solved the e-commerce issue for bricks and mortar?
what, I'm sorry, I misunderstood the first part of that.
Yeah, omnichannel retailing. Has that solved the e-commerce issue? Because for a while there, we were saying bricks and mortar is dead. E-commerce is so convenient and it's cheaper. And you never, I mean, I know the frustration of going to a store. We all do. You go to a store for an item and they don't have it. And yeah, you can order it, but I could have done this from home. But now we've got omnichannel retailing, meaning, of course, that even the bricks and mortar people are saying we've got an online. We've got an online program. I mean, Walmart is coming head and shoulders, shoulder down after Amazon and other stores. Is omnichannel giving new life to bricks and mortar retailers who were previously suffering?
Maybe. I mean, I would have to
It's a
look at
broad question, I know. You can't speak for all
yeah.
retailers.
I really don't know the answer to that. And I mean, I could go with a gut response, but I feel like there has to be data on that. I know that I was reading maybe a year ago or so about how like Amazon's actual business delivering goods. So if you go on Amazon and order your, multivitamins or whatever, and how that's actually always at a loss to Amazon because the delivery costs are actually so much more expensive than their Prime members are paying, but they make up their money in other channels that actually is what drives them. And so that's one of the reasons like they never really got competition in that market is because people realize that that's actually not profitable. Amazon was just able to use that to monetize other options.
I think it's also interesting that some formerly pure play e-commerce companies are opening storefronts. I
Yeah,
mean,
and I'm seeing that. Yeah, I think.
yeah, because having a physical presence, I mean, when you think about it, It's just somebody driving by and seeing your name is advertising. Now, that's an expensive form of advertising, but now they can come in the store. And, you know, Apple did a amazing, the Apple store has been around for a long time now, but has really done an incredible job. I believe it's got the highest sales per square foot of any store. And, you know, when you walk in there, a couple of things that are really distinctive is that there's room, you can breathe. It's not stuffed with items. The aisles are wide. And I was on a podcast recently with our CEO, and he said, and you know, they say touch the equipment. Yeah, most stores you go in, it's like, don't put your hands all over everything. This stuff's for sale. They want you to use the equipment that's there because they're trying to sell you on it. And they invite you to do that. And then on top of that, they have the Genius Bar. And one of my big frustrations when I go to a store is there an employee around I can talk to and just ask a simple question? And at an Apple store, they've got the Genius Bar where the people there are not only whip smart about the product line, but they are cult members. I mean, they believe in the products, and it's a culture there that is so hard to replicate. You see it at Trader Joe's to some extent, and you see it at some other retailers. I'm getting a little far afield here. My point being, they kind of showed everybody how powerful retailing could be, because at first people are thinking, what are you doing that for? And but now you see, even with Amazon, when you want to return something, where do you go? You go to the Kohl's store. And when I go to a Kohl's store to return anything, they put the return desk deep enough into the place that I'm walking past a bunch of stuff that grabs my attention while I'm walking in and out. And I'm sure they're getting sales out of just saying, we'll provide the service to Amazon and just make it easy for you to return a product that was the wrong one or whatever.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it occurred to me during COVID happened and everyone was locked in and everyone kind of went, well, we don't even need retailers. We can get everything brought to our door. And then I think, 6 months after that, everyone's like, oh my goodness, I don't want to be trapped in my home all the time. And I'm seeing like now what you used to take, a week or two to get a reservation at a restaurant in Boston now takes 6 weeks. There is no like popping in and hoping there's an opening at the bar anymore. Like people are demanding the ability to go out. So I want to say that the result of COVID is that people realized how important retail was to them. And so coming out of that, everybody wants to be out there, and I think people want to shop. And I recently was talking to a friend of mine. She's getting ready for a black tie event and ordering dresses online, and she doesn't know what size she is and all the different things. And then she's trying them on in her bedroom at night, like before she goes to bed. And you never just feel as nice as you do when you used to go to the department store and have the person help you and pick out dresses that they thought would look good on you because they've seen other people try them on. And those things, it was an
And give you
experience
some
that it
feedback.
made.
You know,
Yeah.
you're looking in a mirror and they're giving you some feedback. And if you go with a friend, who obviously they're interested in a sale, but you know, if you're going with a friend or a family member, they're going to give you an honest assessment that the fit is right, or you know, but I like that other one better, sort of thing. You have a higher comfort level with your purchase when you've got somebody who's validating that, hey, you feel good in that dress and you look good. I'm telling you as an outside observer. Are malls ever going to make it back? Do you think? I always say that you have the most dynamic property type in real estate is retail, because consumer tastes change so quickly, and you need to respond very quickly and even anticipate that. Probably through social media, you can start to anticipate some of these things. So you have to be very nimble, and because consumer tastes change very quickly. You know, men got into the skinny suits now, but now I hear the baggies are coming back. I could see where, you know, people start saying, you know, I like the mall environment now. I like being able to go into one place and having this plethora of stores. Do you think is there any signs of life with malls? I know that there are successful ones, but overall, they've done dreadfully. What do you see happening there?
I think cluster real estate or cluster retail will always be a thing where, You want more than one store in a close proximity. Does the indoor mall, I mean, I feel like even 10 years ago, we were moving from the closed in, locked down, artificial pumped air mall model to the outdoor mall model, where it looked just like a mall, but where you walk down the hallway was actually an outdoor, it was actually outdoors. So there was no
Yes.
roof over the whole thing. And they were doing like outdoor seating and restaurants and I think trains for kids and playgrounds and things like that. So I think we even started moving away from the mall, oh, a long time ago, the indoor mall to that setting. And then that was being surrounded by hotels and apartment building. And so you were kind of building that multi-dimensional living style. Even then, it just built slowly. I think people will always want more than one retailer in a central location to go to, but I don't know that I believe kind of the 200,000 square foot big anchor department store on either end and locked into this building that you can only exit from two different locations is really going to come back. I think we'll continue to evolve and we may have we may have buildings that have multi-tenants, but I think it's always going to be kind of complementary as opposed to just one big building that has, 30 retailers. That just seems, in my opinion, that seems like it's probably gone by the wayside.
What formats do you see working in retail right now? Now, you've already indicated some of that. It sounds like mixed use or kind of a campus style format, the housing and the retail, either in combination or contiguous. Are there formats, maybe even within those formats, within the formats, within stores and so on? Are there some things that you can share with us that you think are working these days in retail?
I mean, your classic shopping center is not going anywhere. Your strip mall with, your three big anchor tenants, be they usually one's a grocery store, one's some sort of soft goods, one is usually an electronic of some kind, with your out parcels. And then your out parcels are almost always your QSRs, your retail banks, that type of thing. That I don't see going anywhere anytime soon. It's kind of the partial mall, for lack of a better. It gives you a small cluster of real estate or retail where you can get multiple things in one place. You can also grab a hamburger, or a lot of times it's even casual sit-down dining, and then you can leave. And it's all in one place. You can park once and walk to all of these things and go. That I'm seeing booming. New developers are still doing that. It's not slowing down. QSRs are still demanding out parcels and shopping centers that look exactly like that. That I think is going to be around for a very long time. And that's probably still the majority of what I see my retail clients going into overall.
So grocery anchored retail has been very powerful. I mean, most people don't like the idea of shopping for groceries online. You like to pick your own groceries out, especially when you're talking about produce.
Yeah.
And you make multiple trips a week. Oftentimes people make multiple trips a week. So here's I the grocery store is going to deliver the audience. And then you've got the other retailers surrounding it that, and again, what we were talking about earlier, having the right type of retailers, right synergy, to where somebody who's going to go shopping likely would pop into this other store, or maybe pop into that st store first because they're going to get some perishables in there. You don't want your ice cream melting in the trunk while you're doing something else. That's what seems to have worked out real well. What about the headwinds that retailers are facing? Here in 2024, you sound like you feel like it's going to be a very good year. What's going against retailers right now? What are some of the challenges they're facing?
I mean, truthfully, the cost of capital is still a problem. A lot of your big national retailers don't actually use borrowed money to open and expand. They probably have a credit line internally and they have operating and how they handle that. But on the day-to-day, they aren't taking out a loan for each site that they're moving into. So the cost of capital is affecting them less. They tend to plan their expansion models and their expansion plans 3 to 5 years in advance. So the cost of capital is factored in, but it's not killing a deal this year because that deal that we're negotiating is still technically projected not to open until 2026. So it's all financial models at this point. On the
Last,
landlord side,
oh.
though, so who they're actually going to be getting these locations from, the cost of capital is a very real problem. Construction loans are often interest only, and you're not locking in your interest rate until you've actually completed construction, or you're some sort of floating interest rate on top of prime or on top of whatever you've agreed to, and that number is a problem. So I have seen landlords in a shopping center, it's going to be a brand new shopping center, essentially reach out to tenants where they have signed leases and say, hey, we either need more rent or we just can't finish the center. And that's where we are. And everybody kind of has to come back to the drawing board a little bit. And when money got so expensive so quickly with inflation, it happened so fast. They just simply ran out of money, and you can't get blood from a rock. So everybody does have to work together. We kind of like this idea that tenants are opposite landlords, and if the landlord has agreed to something and the tenant has agreed to something, everybody's going to have to perform. But if you can't open your site, you're not going to make any money as a retailer. The landlord can't get you a site that's worth opening. We're all on the same team a little bit here. So you have to work together. And I have seen, that's where I have seen retail kind of come to a halt, is really when money and the cost of money and the cost of construction is really in flux. Because then, you're overspending what your budget was a year ago. You don't have enough money from the bank to actually finish the deal. You can't go back because now the interest rates are 4 times what they were, and that's been the problematic side of real retail. Is I think you do have retailers that are ready to open. I think finding a site that can get there has been problematic in the last few years. I think my landlords lately, though, have seemed much more optimistic about that. I think everybody was just really nervous during 2023. You kind of kept hearing that things were going to go sour, that things were going to go bad, that it was going to be a down year. And to an extent, I really believe some of that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Everybody's so afraid that everybody just freezes. And so they just don't want to do anything that's potentially going to be a huge problem for them in the next year. But I am seeing a lot more positive thought, a lot more positive outlooks going forward in the last few months. So hopefully that'll just keep rolling, and retail will continue to boom.
My guest has been Annie Mallow. She is a partner at the law firm of Holland and Knight LLP. Annie, thank you for taking the time and giving us an update on the nature of retail here in our country.
Thanks for having me.